Welcome to Sightseeing Japan, the podcast where we explore the land of daily adventure. I'm Paul Bresson.
And I'm Jason Ealing. Paul.
Yeah?
Paul.
Sounds like you're about to blow my mind with something.
I just had a question for you.
Okay.
Paul, you ever get sick of Tokyo?
No.
Yeah, me either. But I spend enough time in like the big touristy parts of the city that, sometimes I like to have novel experiences. So it's nice to either explore new parts of the city that I haven't been to that are kind of less popular off the beaten trail. Or it can be fun to just use Tokyo as a home base and do a bunch of day trips out of the city, you know?
Absolutely. Tokyo is a fantastic home base for day trips. So I don't know if I'm selling it well saying I'd never get tired of Tokyo. But when you have a limited amount of time on your trip, you've got to get as wide a berth of experiences as you can, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're thinking this is a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Japan. I want to see Tokyo, of course, because it's, the biggest metropolis in the world. But I also want to see Japan has to offer.
Are you telling me not everyone goes every year, Jason?
Not everyone's that fortunate.
You're right. I wasn't for a long time, and I'm very glad that I am now.
Yeah.
Sorry I cut you off. What were you saying?
Okay. I don't know. I think I was saying, if you have limited time, it can be nice to get outside of the huge, massive megacity and kind of see some other things that Japan has to offer without needing to travel halfway across the country, you know?
That's a great point. If you're only there for a limited amount of time, you don't want to spend a half a day traveling or a whole day traveling.
Yeah, and I think just the concept of doing day trips from a certain kind of central city is a really good way to travel in general, especially in Japan with the excellent train system. You can get around so fast. You can get pretty far out of any major city pretty quickly. And like when you have a home base like that, you don't have to constantly change hotels. You know, it's nice to have a place where you feel comfortable and secure, and you get a chance to know the neighborhood around your hotel, but then you can also get to all these other places and just come back to your hotel, and you get, like, more comfortable with the walk between the train station and your hotel, and it's like a home away from home, you know?
I'm totally with you. Not having to change hotels every night in a row, not having to bring your bags with you everywhere you go, it's really comforting and convenient.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a travel term, or did you just invent home basing? Because I'm with you. I like the home base.
Yeah, I don't know. I just found myself using that phrase. Seemed like it fit.
Yeah.
Another nice thing about day trips is that they can really help you customize your trip to fit your personality. Like, there are so many different types of things within a couple hours of Tokyo that if you're into hiking, you can do that. If you want to relax in a hot spring town, see what that's like, you can do that. If you want to see like how people actually live and just walk around like a suburb, you know, see what a normal person that works in Tokyo, what their life is like, you can do that.
Great point. And you don't have to spend more than a day. You know, there's something you want to see, but you don't want to commit to 3 days over there. You're just in and out. You see it real quick. So I've been on a handful of day trips from Tokyo myself, and I know you have too.
Definitely.
We did Mount Fuji together.
Uh-huh.
And went spelunking in some ice caves that day as well, and saw the lava forest.
That was a really cool day trip.
Yeah, that was nice. We also went to Yokohama together.
Yep.
Made our own cup ramen at the Noodle Museum.
That was awesome. That was only like a half day trip. That didn't take long at all.
Right. And we went to Kawagoe. And saw Candy Alley, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the only three I've really ever done, though.
Let's see. I did Kamakura and Enoshima. Nikko can be a day trip. We didn't do it as a day trip.
Yeah, you're right.
But I still have a big list of day trips that I have not done that I would really like to.
I got a list, too, and that's partly why I wanted to do this episode. There's a few lesser-known places that I think are worth a visit that we'll get a chance to talk about today.
Definitely. So yeah, today we're going to talk about some of the many day trips you can do from Tokyo, and there are way too many to go into extreme detail on every single one, but fortunately we've already done episodes on several day trips, so we're going to start by briefly going through those just to give you an idea of what each place is about and give you the episode numbers where we went into more detail if you want to dig deeper, or if you hear something that, you know, just really appeals to you and your personality or whatever. And then we're going to go into some new places that we have not talked about before.
Yep.
But first, is it time for... Item of the Week!
Our friends at Bento & Co. have a website that sells authentic Japanese bento boxes, cookware, snacks, and more. So every week, we like to highlight one special item available on their website for your interest. And today it's your turn, Jason.
Yes, it is. Today I want to talk about their mini ghost onigiri maker.
Oh, a ghost onigiri.
Have you not seen this?
I don't think so.
Let me tell you all about it. So onigiri, of course, are rice balls. They come in a lot of different shapes and sizes, and you can put whatever you want in there. But this set gives you molds to make two rice balls that look like ghosts. So you can really spice up your bentos. One of them is kind of like a Pac-Man style ghost, you
okay.
know?
Yeah.
With like little ridges on the bottom. The other one is more of a kind of classic Slimer like ghost, maybe. With he's got kind of a tail that curves off at the back.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
But it gets even better, Paul. Because this set also comes with little hole punchers that let you make eyes and mouths for these ghosts. You just get a sheet of seaweed and you can punch out the little mouths and eyes. You can mix and match the different shapes of eyes and mouths to make like different expressions and stuff.
That's next level.
Yeah, they look really cool. So this is perfect if you have one of those like kids that's kind of creepy and like a little bit too into Halloween, you know what I mean? And they want a little reminder of their own mortality in their lunchbox.
Yeah, like you when you were a kid?
Exactly. I would have loved this as a kid.
Yeah.
So if you want to get your own, you can go to bentoandco.com and use our discount code sightseeing10 to get 10% off your order. Or you could just use the link on the support us page of our website, sightseeingjapanpodcast.com, and that link will automatically apply the discount. Ready to talk about some specific day trips, Paul?
I sure am.
Where should we start?
Well, we're starting with ones we've already covered, right?
Yes.
So I'd say Kamakura, because that's maybe the biggest one of all.
That is a very popular one, yes. And you have not been there, right?
I have not.
I spent a day there, so I will very quickly lay out the main points on this one. So this is, how much time do I have here?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. I think I can do that. Okay, so just south and a little bit west of Tokyo, you find Kamakura. It's a historic seaside town. It used to be the capital of Japan, so there's a huge amount of history here. It's filled with amazing temples and shrines. It's got the Daibutsu, the great Buddha, this huge iron Buddha, I believe. I think it's iron. It's got museums. It's got shopping. It's got beaches. There are festivals throughout the year. So you could plan a day trip to try to coincide with one of those festivals. That could be really cool. And if you're visiting Kamakura, you should also visit Enoshima, which is a little island that you can walk out to. You don't even need to take a ferry or anything. It's connected to Honshu by this big bridge. And it's a super fun place to explore. It's got stray cats, local specialties, a shrine inside a cave in the face of a cliff.
Nice.
So to sum it up, I'd say visit Kamakura if you're interested in history or if you just want a relaxing day with a bit more nature than Tokyo has to offer. Great ocean views, super, super fun. If you want to learn more, if that strikes your fancy, you can hear all about it in episode 72. We did a whole episode on it. Was that 2 minutes?
Didn't time you. I just made up that 2 minute thing.
Did it feel like less than 2 minutes?
It did.
Good. Okay.
Well done.
Thank you. Next up, this is a place that we've both been to. I've been there twice, actually, and the second time I went was with Paul here, and that is Kawagoe. Do you want to take this one?
Yeah.
Starting the timer. 2 minutes. Ready, set, go.
2 minutes easy. Kawagoe, best known for Candy Alley. It's this old-time city. So you see these old-time warehouses, and it feels like you're back in the past in Japan. And you get to go to all these little sweet shops that sell all these different types of little candies that you can buy. And they're very inexpensive. So you can just load up, try 100 different things, and get some very unique candies and flavors that you wouldn't have got anywhere else. Also, we stopped at a Matsuri museum here that was fantastic, that had a couple of the old Matsuri floats on display. And it was really awesome to get to see those up close and personal. And that's why you should go to Kawagoe. And if you're interested, we talked about it in episode 46.
I need to add a few things. I think we still have some time before the 2 minutes is up. Kawagoe is known as Little Edo. It was a castle town back in the Edo period, and it was important for the defense of Edo. Edo is Tokyo. They're the same city. They called it Edo back then. There's a warehouse district with old historic warehouses, and they got other museums besides the one that we went to. There's a bell tower that's pretty famous. You can get great street food there. You didn't even mention the sweet potatoes, I think, right?
Yeah, lots of sweet potatoes. I remember eating one.
Yeah, we got, well, I had sweet potato ice cream. We got sweet potato beer, candied sweet potatoes, sweet potato fries. It's great. Yeah, I love Kawagoe. Episode 46, if you want to hear more. Okay, another one that we have both been to and we went there together is Nikko.
Yes.
Nikko is a very historic and sacred city, a ways north of Tokyo, and it's definitely worth a visit. But this day trip involves a bit more transit time than the others we've mentioned so far. It takes about 2 hours to get there from Tokyo. And personally, if we're talking about day trips, I mean, if you look up lists of the big popular day trips, you'll see Nikko on a lot of them. But I think Nikko deserves more than a day, personally.
I agree.
Especially if you're into hiking and you want to spend some time in nature. You could spend a whole day just hiking out there. It's beautiful.
It's wonderful.
But you could do a day trip. You'll see some of the most impressive temples and shrines in the country, and they're all nestled in nature. You'll see rows of these giant cedar trees that were planted all the way back in the 1600s. So to sum that up, Nikko is all about history, especially Tokugawa history. If you're interested in that stuff, you got to go to Nikko. Another day trip that kind of is in the same area, and I don't think you could squeeze in Nikko and these places as well, but you could do a day trip to Edo Wonderland and Tobu World Square. You could easily do the two of those together in a day trip.
Yeah.
And that might be like a more family-friendly trip than the temples and shrines of Nikko. You know, kids are going to be more interested in the theme parks. Do you want to do like 10 seconds on what Edo Wonderland and Tobu World Square are about?
10 seconds.
Yes. Ready, go.
Edo Wonderland is an Edo-themed amusement park. It is fantastic. They do shows. Everybody's dressed up.
5 seconds, Paul.
It's really fun. And Tobu World Square has a whole bunch of dioramas of one of the most famous buildings in the world.
You went a little bit over, but well done. Well done. So if you want to hear all about that stuff, go to episode 80. Did we talk about the theme parks in that one, or it was, I think we did.
I'm
pretty sure we did.
We did, yes. Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. Episode 80.
Also, I didn't look up the numbers, but we talked about Nikko a lot in our episode recap, or our trip recaps from our last trip.
Yeah.
So you can check that out, too, to get our experience of what we felt right after we got back from that trip.
Right. That would have been in the 110s somewhere.
Yeah.
112, 13, something like that. Okay, next up. Mount Fuji. Mount Fuji is, of course, a huge attraction in Japan, and there are many ways to enjoy it. You could climb it as a day trip, even. Like, you could start at the bottom, climb to the top, climb back down in a day. It's possible. But you'd want to be in pretty good shape for that. It's not easy. Most people stay overnight on the mountain, so there's time to acclimate to the altitude and everything.
Yeah.
And a lot of people want to see the sunrise from the top, too. So, of course, you'd have to stay on the mountain to do that. But you could climb it in a day. Otherwise, another good day trip idea is you could just spend a day looking at the mountain from various spots. I mean, it's a super beautiful mountain. You know, there's a reason it's so famous. And of course, it's sacred and all that stuff. And that goes way back. But even just looking at it, it looks so good, man. It's such a good looking mountain.
It does. And there's a million vantage points, too. Like Fuji Five Lakes, Hakone, all sorts of places you can go.
There are a ton of spots that are famous just because it's a good place to look at Mount Fuji.
And you can see it sometimes from Tokyo on a really clear day if you're in a tall building.
There's actually a map I found online. This guy had gone to all these places around Tokyo, and he mapped out the entire city and like highlighted the places where you could see Mount Fuji from there.
That's cool.
Yeah. One specific place I wanted to mention is called Arakuriyama Sengen Park. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's where you can see one of the most iconic views of Japan. You got the mountain in the background, and then there's a big red pagoda in the foreground. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, that picture, yes. Yeah. I've seen a million times.
And if you're there in Sakura season too, you get the Sakura and the pagoda and the mountain. Like, holy crap, it couldn't get much more iconic Japanese picture, you know? Yeah. So yeah, Paul and I, like we said, we did a day trip. It was actually a guided tour where we just took a bus basically halfway up the mountain and kind of got out at Station 5 and checked out the buildings there. And it was fun.
Yep.
So that's another option. I mean, if you look up tours around Mount Fuji, you're going to find all sorts of stuff. But if you want to hear more about Mount Fuji, and I think we mostly focused on how to climb Mount Fuji, that's episode 10.
Mount Fuji is so iconic to Japan that we included it in the original 10.
Yeah.
The original 10 that all dropped at the same time. We did Mount Fuji.
Yes, we did. I think there was some interesting history there too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So another popular thing in Japan is amusement parks. Tokyo Disney Sea, we already talked about Edo Wonderland, and Tobu World Square.
Tokyo Disneyland, right next to Tokyo Disney Sea.
Yep.
Fuji Q Highland, that's right by Mount Fuji.
Yeah.
Do that and that get one a view of the mountain too.
But we did a whole episode on amusement parks, episode 94. So we did not include any amusement parks in this episode, as they've already been covered.
If you like Hello Kitty, you could go to Sanrio Puro Land. That's easily reachable from Tokyo for a day trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go listen to episode 94. We talked about a bunch of them, and a bunch of them are not too far from Tokyo. Next up is a place that neither of us have been to, I believe, and that's Mount Takao. If you don't have time, or for whatever other reason, you can't climb Mount Fuji, Mount Takao is a nice mountain that you can climb. It's very easily accessible from Tokyo. There's also just a ton of other great hiking around Tokyo. Like, they have a whole network of trails that kind of wrap around the Kanto region.
Yeah.
So all of that could be a day trip. I mean, not the entire thing. You can't hike all of that in a day, but you could pick any section of it you wanted to and go do that. But one of the most popular hikes is, like I said, up this sacred mountain, Mount Takao, which is about an hour west of central Tokyo by train. It's got beautiful scenery, a temple, a nature museum, and a monkey park. Did you realize there was a monkey park there?
Yeah, I think we mentioned that.
I didn't remember ever hearing that before. Hmm. But anyway, if you're into hiking and you want to do a hiking day trip, go listen to episode 119. We talked about a bunch of hiking trails in that one, and one of the sections we focused on was the Kanto Furei Trail. Right around Tokyo.
Yep.
So I think that's all the places that we have covered before in past episodes. So now let's talk about some new stuff, Paul.
Okay, I'm ready.
It sounded to me like you were pretty excited about a city called Utsunomiya.
Yeah. I'm also excited about this one, too, because this isn't anywhere I see much on any travel resource I could find. This was just me thinking, man, we passed through here on the way to Nikko last year. What's there? And I found some really cool stuff. So Utsunomiya is just over an hour north of central Tokyo.
I saw it takes less than an hour.
I think it depends on what train you're riding.
By bullet train specifically, you can get there in less than an hour.
Yeah, maybe on one of the faster ones.
Sure.
But it's around an hour. On the Tohoku Shinkansen.
And like pretty much north from Tokyo, right? Did you say that?
North. I've always thought of it as the gateway to Nikko, because that's the station you get off the train to take the smaller train to Nikko. And that's where everybody probably knows it from.
Makes sense. It's also the capital of Chochigi Prefecture, though.
Yeah, and its largest city at just over 500,000 population. And it's known for its mini gyoza restaurants.
What are gyoza?
Basically dumplings, Japanese style.
You might have had these before if you've eaten like some Japanese food. I mean, even outside of Japan, like at Japanese restaurants, you see gyoza all the time. But a lot of them are like pretty similar. Like you can get veggie ones, you can get meat ones, pork or chicken or whatever. But I got the impression that in Utsunomiya, you can get so many more different types of gyoza than you would find anywhere else.
You must. I heard there was 30 plus gyoza specialty restaurants. They've all got to have their own specials.
Yeah. I want some that are just stuffed with cheese. I don't think I've ever seen a cheese gyoza, but I bet they're out there.
No, I love the veggie ones. Cabbage, and they put these little tofu crumbles in there, and a little spice. It's great. Love it.
Tofu and cabbage. Mm-mm.
Wonderful. You haven't lived until you've had tofu and cabbage.
I'm definitely not being sarcastic.
So moving on to why I think Utsunomiya is worth some attention here. It's a little bit on the outskirts of the city, about a 30-minute bus ride from Utsunomiya Station. You can get to Oya Temple. This is a temple built into a cliff, which is already pretty cool, right? And they've got ancient stone Buddhas there, one of which is said to be the oldest in all of Japan at about 1,000 years old.
The temple itself dates to about 1,200 years ago, I saw.
I wasn't super sure on a date, but yeah, it seems very, very old.
Yeah. So I saw it was established in 810, actually.
Okay.
By Kobo Daishi. You remember him? Does that sound familiar? I'm putting you on the spot again, like I
no.
always do.
No.
Does the name Kukai ring a bell at all? It's the same guy. Kobo Daishi, Kukai, one of the very most famous monks in Japan.
I mean, is he the one that went and founded Nikko?
I don't think so. Let me check.
Okay.
No. It looks like this guy was around a little after that guy, but Kobo Daishi, aka Kukai, was the founder of Shingon Buddhism, and he's in eternal meditation at Okunoin Cemetery in Koyasan, which I went to. I saw his mausoleum, you know, at that one, the biggest and most sacred cemetery in Japan. That's a big deal.
Okay.
He's a famous guy. He did a lot of amazing things.
Okay. There's also said to be really fantastic carvings inside the cave, but no pictures are allowed, so I couldn't see.
Inside the cave?
Yeah, there's...
Are there statues carved outside the cave, too?
I think so.
Okay. So I saw that at least those ones are supposed to be some of the best sculptures in the country.
Yeah.
Carved with, like, the highest level of skill.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
There's also a 27-meter-tall stone kanon statue. And there's a stairway right behind it where you can climb up and basically look over its shoulder, which seemed kind of cool.
The Kanon statue is at the temple?
It's like on the temple grounds. It's very close.
Cool.
And it's basically carved right out of a cliff face.
Cliffs are fun.
Yeah. And there's also a small water garden with some large snake statues.
Snake statues?
Yeah.
I'd be interested in that.
White snake, red eyes, like a Yu-Gi-Oh card.
Oh, cool.
So, walking a little bit north from the temple, we get to maybe even a cooler place, Jason.
Is it the Oya History Museum?
Yes.
That's what caught my eye, man.
Right?
This place looks really cool. Mostly because there's a subterranean cave. Like, this place used to be a quarry, and now the museum sits in this big cavern that was dug up.
Yeah, and it's huge in there. It looks so cool.
They got stone here from this quarry as far back as the 6th century for making burial mounds for local lords. I saw that the cave now is as big as a baseball field.
Wow.
That's crazy. During World War II, they used the cave to make military aircrafts. That's how big it is. It's like bigger than an airplane hangar.
It's factory size. One thing I thought was really cool about this is since it's been mined for so long, you can go to the older parts of the mine and see the chisel marks in the side that they were making 1,000 years ago.
Wow.
And then you slowly get to the newer part of the mine and you can see it become more smooth and machine-like because they're not digging it by hand anymore.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
Saw that these days, they still have like all sorts of different events down there in this cavern. It's used as a wedding hall. Part of it, I guess, is used as a wine cellar.
And they film movies and TV series there. They have...
What kind of show would take place in a giant cavern?
Any show that had a cave scene. They just come to this place because they'd have room for all their equipment and lights and everything.
Sure.
And you could find out if you go, because they have an exhibit there with photos of the films and TV series being filmed there.
Nice.
Yeah. If you're still not stoned out, there is an active quarry not far from here too, called Canejon Quarry. And they give tours there, and you can see them still mining this Oya stone. They call it Oya stone. It's this special stone.
Cool.
And apparently it makes great pizza. They try to sell you Oya stone pizza ovens. And if you go to this quarry, you can cook your own pizza in the stone oven.
At the quarry, you can cook pizza?
Yeah, because they have a little like tourist area there.
Wow.
They let you put your own pizza together however you want, and then they cook it for you, and then they try to sell you the oven. They're like, wasn't that pizza good? You should buy an oven.
That's novel.
Right. All this was outside of the city. There also looked like a couple of interesting shrines near the city center if you're stopping to get some gyoza.
I saw they have a science museum that's supposed to be pretty good for kids.
Nice.
I'll be honest with you, Paul. I don't know if maybe I shouldn't even say this, but just in case somebody follows our advice and goes there and is disappointed, let me put a disclaimer here.
Yeah.
Like, I did some Googling on opinions from people that had been there and stuff, and I got the impression that this might be more of a day trip for people who have spent a lot of time in Japan and just, you know, have seen all the big touristy stuff and want to see something new. I don't know if this is the best day trip for somebody's like first time in Japan. Maybe your time is better spent elsewhere. Unless, I mean, you know, maybe if the things that we just mentioned really sound fascinating to you, maybe it's worth it. But no offense, Utsunomiya. Just something I wanted to mention.
I'm not going to argue with you on that one. If it's your first time in Japan, this temple in a cave is pretty cool, but you could go to Kyoto or something too.
Sure.
Experience some other stuff. So where you want to travel next, Jason?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about Hakone.
Okay.
I know you already mentioned this, but this is another one of those where if you Google popular day trips from Tokyo, you're going to see Hakone on like almost every list.
Yeah.
So this is a really popular onsen town, just about 90 minutes southwest of Tokyo. Good place to enjoy an onsen, a hot spring bath. You can also see great views of Mount Fuji. I guess that's where it came up already. And some great natural scenery. There's a lot of art there. There's an open-air museum sculpture park type thing that looks really cool. So you definitely could do a day trip here. But like Nico, I think to get the most out of it, you might want to spend a night or two instead. I saw a lot of people recommending like just stay a night or two, especially because this seems like the perfect place to stay overnight at a ryokan, a traditional Japanese inn.
Bingo.
So you got to stay overnight to get that full experience.
Right. That's why I didn't include it on my list for this episode. I feel like it's an overnight trip.
Yeah.
And it is really cool. I also think it probably deserves its own episode someday as well, rather than a 20-minute blurb here.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking. We'll do a full episode on it. So that's all I was going to say about it here.
Perfect.
But it really is high on my list. Like,
yeah.
I want to go there.
Me too.
Next city I wanted to talk about, or was this, I think you brought this one up, didn't you, Paul? Odawara?
I did.
Odawara? I can never decide if I should say it like an American or try to sound, you know, say it like they would in Japan. Odawara.
Yeah, this one was actually not really on my list. I have a pretty extensive list of places I want to go in Japan. And when I looked up Tokyo day trips for this episode, this one came up. But I can explain why this was not on my list. Because I think this is a fantastic place to go on a trip when it's your first time in Japan. Because this has the closest castle keep to Tokyo in all of Japan. But I've already seen a bunch of castles.
Is Chiba Castle closer?
It doesn't count, and we'll get into that later.
Okay. I know that was controversial. Question. When I said it, I know it's controversial.
Yeah, good question. We'll get into that. So Odawara is about 50 minutes southwest of Tokyo on the Tokaido Shinkansen.
Maybe you can make it there in 40 minutes. I'm just going to throw that in there.
I think it depends. Tokyo's a big place. Where do you start in Tokyo?
Very good point.
Exactly. So that will change your time a little bit. It is in Kanagawa Prefecture on the Pacific Coast.
So just a ways past Kamakura, basically.
Very near Hakone, actually. You will pass through here on your way to Hakone, most likely.
All right.
And there is a population of about 188,000. So a city, but not a huge one. So I mentioned the castle, right?
Yep, you did.
So let's dive right in. There's a beautiful, reconstructed, not original, castle.
Not original.
And it's the closest one to Tokyo, being less than an hour away. Inside the castle is the history museum, because that's what always seems to be inside castles.
Yep.
And it's supposed to be a pretty cool one with some local history. But there's also a samurai museum here.
Near or in? Or
in the castle grounds, I believe.
Castle grounds, all right.
And they show off a bunch of weapons and armor. And I know you like the armor just like I like the armor.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing like Japanese armor with the full face mask and everything.
Mm-hmm. If you're not excited about that yet, go listen to the two episodes. One we did about samurai and one we did about swords.
Yeah.
And then you'll be excited to go see that stuff.
There's also a ninja museum.
Oh, man. They got it all.
Yeah. So, right, that's why I was like, okay, this place actually does sound really cool and covers a lot of bases for you. And the top floor gives you a really amazing view of the ocean and the city surrounding it.
And at the very least, even though it's not an original castle, you'll get to see kind of the main architectural features of Japanese castles.
Yes.
By the way, go listen to the episode we did about castles, and then you'll be all ready to get super excited about all this stuff.
You'll hear our voices in your head. Like, oh yeah, they talked about the moat. Oh, they talked about the arrow slits and the way they funnel you down a maze of hallways.
Mm-hmm.
A little history note. The castle was originally restored because it was turned into a villa for the royal family and then later used as a public exhibition and museum as it is now.
Oh, so like even the reconstructed castle has some history to it.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. That's all I got for Odawara. There's a couple other places, but like that's the one that makes Odawara a place worth going to.
I gotcha. I'll throw in a couple things.
Okay.
Odawara has a fishing port where you can get fresh fish from the various restaurants. That's just cool to see. Port cities are always fun to just kind of wander around by the water.
Yep.
They also have Tsujimura Botanical Gardens.
That did look kind of cool.
Flowers and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, this next one, this is personally at the top of my list, just because I haven't been there, and it has so much stuff that is personally interesting to me. This has actually been on my list since the first time I was in Japan. I just still haven't found the time to make it out there.
Really? But, yeah. Since all the way back then?
Because of the bonsai, man.
Yeah.
The bonsai trees.
But, you were the one that turned me onto this place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Omiya. It's... Well, okay, so let me go into details about, like, where exactly this place is. Because it's north of Tokyo, but it's in Saitama Prefecture, which is a prefecture that sits right on top of Tokyo Prefecture. I've seen Saitama called the New Jersey of Japan. Have you heard that, Paul?
Yeah, and I get why they say that, but...
It sounds maybe disparaging.
Yeah, right? Sorry, New Jerseyans, but...
But I don't... I think the main reason it's called that is just because, like, so many people commute into Tokyo for work, just like a lot of people commute into New York City for work.
Yeah.
So, like, people working in New York live in New Jersey. People working in Tokyo, a lot of them live in Saitama. So I think some people overlook Saitama because they think, oh, it's just, like, a residential suburb, you know? It's just where the commuters live. But there is some really cool stuff there. I mean, Kawagoe, even, is in Saitama.
Okay, yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
But okay, so Saitama City is the capital of Saitama Prefecture, right?
Yeah.
And in that area is this ward, Omiya, okay? So a ward of Saitama City in Saitama Prefecture. I guess you don't really need to know all that. It's north of Tokyo.
I thought it was funny because I already don't remember what episode, but I was listening to one of our recent episodes and we were talking about the history. Oh, Sapporo, the history of Sapporo. Of these like wards merging and oh, now it absorbed this suburb and this city. And this was Omiya. It was a city and then it combined with two other cities. Mm-hmm. And now that's Saitama City.
Yeah.
Population is 1.3 million.
The ward?
For Saitama or City.
Saitama City.
Saitama
whole city.
I couldn't find a ward population. Okay. So it's a big city.
Yeah. Yeah. So Omiya specifically, it only takes about 30 minutes to get there from Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And like I spilled the beans already. The main thing that I'm excited about there is the bonsai trees, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
We had a whole episode about those, by the way.
Yes.
I didn't write down the number.
But I didn't either.
But okay, so I need to visit the Omiya Bonsai Art Museum, where, of course, you can see a ton of just the most incredible bonsai trees you've ever seen. It feels weird saying bonsai, even though I know that's right in Japanese. I'm going to say bonsai.
Bonsai, it's got to be, because yeah. That's just became an American or an English word now.
But they have trees indoors and outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
On Google Maps, I found that you can actually use Street View inside the museum.
Oh, no way.
You can walk around inside the building to get a sense of what to expect if you're interested.
That's cool.
And like the trees aren't just sitting on pedestals. Like you might expect them to be on kind of little pillars, like an art museum or something. But they're presented in a really nice way. Like they have little tokonomas to display them in. Remember what those are? Little alcoves, like in the traditional tatami rooms where they have scrolls, maybe.
Have flower arrangements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have things like that to display them in. So they look really nice.
Couple things that caught my eye is that some of the trees are about 1,000 years old.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen bonsai trees before, you still probably haven't seen anything quite like what you're going to see at this place. Like, it's going to blow your mind.
The other thing that I thought was cool is that at the start of the museum, they walk you through the basics of the art of bonsai.
Nice.
So you get a little refresher course, and then you can really view these trees and see those principles played out.
Yeah, you really can't fully appreciate bonsai until you know something about how much it takes to make them what they are, you know? And that's what we try to do in our bonsai episode. It's like, I mean, it's just incredible the amount of care and time and effort and sometimes centuries that goes into making these things so beautiful.
1,000-year-old bonsai tree probably had somebody looking after it every day for, 50 generations or something?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
It really is. It really is. And that's not the only place you can see bonsai in Omiya either.
Nope.
Not far from the museum is the Omiya Bonsai Village, which seems pretty similar. Like, you get to see a bunch more bonsai, of course. They actually have 6 gardens filled with bonsai trees. And from May 3rd to 5th, there's a bonsai festival there. That would be really cool to go to.
Yeah. I saw there was a small visitor center where you can get maps that show a walking route of the area so that you can catch all the different bonsai displays. And it's a nice little quiet part of town. Everyone says it's just a lovely stroll.
It totally seems like it. This year, man, on this next trip, I want to go there. And if we don't have time to get there together, I'm going to stay an extra day and go by myself. That's how intent I am on visiting this place.
Okay. I think it's tentatively on the plans, isn't it?
I don't know. Our plans are still a bit fluid, right?
Yeah, but tentatively, it's in the plans.
Was it? Did we already talk about it, actually?
I mean, I've got a little...
You have more written down than I do. I think.
I've got a little...
Everything's just floating around
idea
in my head.
Idea
right
written down, yes.
All right, cool.
So you told me about the bonsai, and I was like, I have to go here. But then looking around, I was like, oh man, there's other cool stuff here, too. There is a really good railway museum run by the JR Group. And it's got a bunch of interactive history. There's a massive history zone that talks about all the development of the old trains up until the new trains. There's a technology zone that displays how these trains work and what technology they have in them. And then there's a huge train model area that has a bunch of models of trains and a bunch of real trains that you can see.
That you can go inside, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then there's an interactive part of it where they have driving simulators and you learn about signal systems and can do braking operations. So you can really do the things that you just learned about.
Awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like a really cool thing, especially if you're interested in trains at all. Also, near Omiya is the Saitama Prefectural Museum of History and Folklore.
That's near Omiya, but not in it?
It's hard to tell when it's a ward of a bigger city.
Sure.
I think it might be in it.
Okay.
And I like history and folklore, so this place seemed cool, right?
Yeah.
It just dives through the lifestyle of the people of Saitama from ancient times all the way up until the modern day.
Cool. I have a bunch of stuff to mention in Omiya Park.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
There's this really
Please,
big park.
Please, walk us through the park.
I will. So this is like not far from those bonsai places. You could pretty easily walk to the park, I think, right?
Yes.
So number one, it's got Musashi Ichinomiya Hikawa Jinja, which is one of the oldest shrines in Japan. And it's super important because it was the guardian shrine for Musashi Province, which was a historical province that covered what is now Tokyo and most of Saitama and Kanagawa prefectures.
When was it founded? I don't think you said.
No, I just said one of the oldest shrines in Japan.
Sorry to ask you a question you didn't say. Now I'm doing it.
Well, tell me. What, how old? What?
The number I found was founded in 473 BC.
What? That's crazy.
But I like triple checked, and it seems a little fluid depending on who
you
ask.
Okay. I think I remember why I didn't have that written down.
Yeah.
Because that seemed suspicious just because that's like too old.
Yeah.
But... And when I first wrote it in my notes, I like went back later looking at my notes. I'm like, that can't be right. I must have mistyped that, right? And then I looked it up. I was like, no, a bunch of sources. And I think even the official website for this place say that date.
Yeah,
but
they claim 2,500 years old.
Yeah.
But going back that far, who knows? But Shinto was around in Japan at the time. They must have had some shrines or pseudo shrines.
Yeah.
But either way, absolutely ancient.
Yeah. And it's big and red and beautiful. And it enshrines Susanoo. Does that ring a bell?
Sounds familiar, but...
That's the god of sea and storms. I think Susanoo came up in a folktale about sake. Maybe it was about Taiko. Like the first drums, it was a sake barrel. I think that story involves Susanoo.
Okay.
Anyway, back to the park. Other things in the park. The park also has... Wait a minute. Saitama Prefectural Museum of History and Folklore. Is that the one that you were talking about?
Yeah, it's on the edge of the park.
Okay, it's in the park.
Yeah, yeah. Covered it already.
There we go. There's also, I'm surprised you didn't mention this, Paul, the Omiya Park Baseball Stadium. It's an outdoor stadium where you can see Japanese professional baseball. At first I thought, like, is this just like a smaller thing for, you know, the high school teams or something like that? But no, it's pro teams play there.
Japan has a thriving industrial league, they call it. Just like all their major teams are owned by companies like the Nippon Ham Fighters, a bunch of other companies have smaller teams that play in what they call industrial leagues, where they'll hire these guys to work at the company and give them a job, but then they go play baseball too for the company.
Do they play here? I saw that this was professional baseball.
I'm not sure what team plays there. But I know they have numerous industrial leagues, is what they call them.
That's true. If you want to hear more about Japanese baseball, get excited about that. Episode 39, Paul talked about it for a long, long time.
And Jason had a couple things to say. The history part was pretty cool, though, right? Yeah,
I think you learned
a bit on that.
I liked that episode. I'm not a big sports guy at all, but I thought it was a good episode. Also in the park, you'll find a zoo. And tons of sakura trees. If you're there during sakura season, cherry blossom season, looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, next place I wanted to talk about is Yokohama. And as we mentioned, Paul, the two of us have been here together, but
We dipped our toe in Yokohama, but we haven't done Yokohama.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. So Yokohama is Japan's second largest city, very easily accessible. It's like right next to Tokyo. So of course, like it does feel like a big city still.
Oh yeah.
It feels similar to Tokyo in a way you could say, but it's got a bit of a different feel as well, especially by the water, because Yokohama is one of the first ports in Japan to open to foreign trade. So you really get that international flavor down in the port area. And there's a bunch of other interesting stuff to see around that part of the city.
Like the Chinatown. You always know a place was one of the few ports open if it has a Chinatown.
Yeah, that's actually Japan's largest Chinatown. So if you want to eat all sorts of great food and soak in the Chinese vibe, lots of cool stuff to look at there. But specifically in the port area, I got a big list of things.
Okay.
So in Minato Mirai. That means port of the future. You can tour a 1930s sailing ship. There are a bunch of museums around there too. There's the Mitsubishi Industrial Museum where you can learn about rockets and submarines. There are a couple rail museums if you're into trains. If you have kids, they might like the Yokohama Anpanman Children's Museum. So, like, if you're a museum person, Minato Mirai alone would keep you busy all day, easily. It also has Yokohama Landmark Tower. Did you see this tower, Paul?
I mean, I think we saw it, didn't we? We
didn't I don't remember seeing this at all. I remember seeing a lot of tall buildings, but doing the research, this one kind of stood out to me. It's the third tallest skyscraper in Japan.
Ooh.
And it has a Sky Garden Observatory where you can get great views of the city.
Sounds nice. I thought the architecture in Yokohama was really cool. They had some really nice looking buildings.
Definitely. Yeah, I don't know. I bet if I look back through my pictures from that day, I would find it
in
one of those pictures. But so Minato Mirai, that port of the future, that's kind of like one island in the port area. Right next to that, you'll find another little island kind of thing with the Cup Noodle Museum. This is where we spent most of our time in Yokohama.
Yeah, it was fantastic. The display they had where they had every package of instant ramen they'd ever made from the beginning to modern times kind of flowing throughout the wall of a whole room was unbelievable. I also remember the piece of art they had when you walk in. There's a noodle bowl hung from strings above you that's really big where the noodles are all flowing over. That looked really cool.
Just pure white, right?
Yeah.
Is that the one you're thinking of?
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that place is super cool. I highly recommend it if you like cup noodles. Like, making your own noodles is really fun.
Yeah.
I just wanted to back up and correct myself for a second. Minato Mirai isn't an island. The Cup Noodle Museum is on a little island type thing, but Minato Mirai is more of a peninsula, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
Also near that area is Yokohama Red Brick Warehouse,
mm-hmm.
which is a shopping center inside an old red brick warehouse. It looks really pretty.
Yeah.
And also on the sea there is Yamashita Park. You know anything about that?
Nope.
It's a beautiful seaside park. It's got tons of flowers. There's a fountain. Really impressive landscaping. It's just a pretty park. Might be fun to walk through. Just adds to that I don't know, the feel of the port area. It's just a really cool area with like so much fun stuff to walk around, you know?
Yeah, it's like well developed and well thought out.
Yeah, Japan is good at that. Just like planning cities in a way that they're really fun to explore. Like, you don't even need to go anywhere specific. You just kind of walk around and it's like, wow, this is a really pretty pleasant place.
Yeah. I'll never get over the fact that we're in a city that's right on the spot where two major rivers meet, and we've got like nothing cool to do on the river. I'll never get over that.
Hmm. I mean, you can go kayaking or canoeing on the river.
Yeah, right. You can get to the river, but like, there's
what do you want, Paul? What are the?
I want a cool river walk area. I want some restaurants on the bluffs overlooking the river.
I get you. Yeah.
We got nothing like that. There's like a small little section of Minneapolis where you can like walk along the river. That's just a park.
That's true.
And that's it. That's like it.
What about Harriet Island Park?
That's kind of a cool place.
But it's still just a park.
It's just a park. Like, you have to go there when there's an event happening, and then it's really cool.
Yeah.
I just think it's a missed opportunity.
Agreed. I feel like around here, most places, there's nowhere to go to just exist and like, you know, admire the area. Everywhere you go, the only thing to do there is buy things.
Right. You drive to a big place or restaurant, park in the big parking lot, walk into the building, and then leave back to your car and go home. And that's like all you ever do anywhere. Anyways.
No, I want to keep going down this road. I don't know. I just want to say, like, I think a big part of that is trains. Like, when trains are such a big part of how people get around, there's much more opportunity to build walkable spaces outside or inside, even like underground, even in the train stations and stuff. There are just more places where so many people flow through. It just makes sense to make them attractive, interesting places to exist, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you. A public transit city versus a car city.
Yeah. Look up Strode's. If you want to hear more about like that idea, S-T-R-O-D-E-S, OADS. They're streets and roads, and they're terrible. And YouTube will tell you why. Anyway, should we move on?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it's my fault that we weren't moving on already, but...
Well, I brought it up. So it's both our faults.
Okay. I don't mind sharing the blame. Next city, Chiba.
Chiba. Chiba's a very overlooked city, I think. It is a very large city of about 1 million people just east of Tokyo on the Tokyo Bay.
And it's the capital of Chiba Prefecture, right?
Yep.
And the whole prefecture, I mean, there's, of course, a bunch of stuff there. The Disney places are in Chiba Prefecture, but we're focusing on Chiba City specifically for this day trip. You can't do a day trip and see everything there is to see in the whole prefecture.
Correct.
So, sorry, Paul, did you say exactly where it's located?
I said east of Tokyo.
Okay. So it's like right on the other side of Tokyo Bay, essentially.
Yes.
There's the bay in between.
Yep. It takes 40 minutes or less to get there from Tokyo. From central Tokyo. From eastern Tokyo, probably even quicker.
Okay. I saw about an hour, but...
Yeah. Depends. Chiba City's big, too. So from where you're going in one city to where you're going in another affects that.
Yep.
One thing that puts Chiba City on the map, Jason...
The amazing castle, right?
No. The suspended monorail.
Okay.
It has a 15.2 kilometer suspended monorail, which is the longest in the world.
Wow.
And as you're going around the city on that, since it's suspended, you kind of get a cool bird's eye view of the city as you go.
I bet you do.
But yeah, it's got Chiba Castle. You want to start there?
It's a controversial castle because, I mean, it's a castle, I guess. You can call it a castle. But it has basically zero historical significance. It's not even a recreation of a castle that used to be there. It's just something they built to look cool. They're like, we want a castle, you know?
They built a castle. A museum that looks like a castle.
Yeah, pretty much. It houses the Chiba City Folk Museum. You can learn about the local history. But I guess, I mean, at the very least, you'll get a rough idea of what a castle, a Japanese castle, looks like.
You will.
That's something,
it,
right?
It looks great. Absolutely.
Yeah. Probably more value in the museum itself, though.
Well, if we're going to stay on the museum kick for a second, there is the Natural History Museum and Institute of Chiba, which is said to be one of the best natural history museums in Japan, and it houses artifacts from the human history of the peninsula that Chiba encompasses. Going way back in time. And also a large native plant park.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I have more museums. The Chiba City Museum of Art looks pretty cool.
Okay.
The building used to be a bank when it was built in the 1920s. And the architecture is really interesting. Like, it looks like, you know, one of those super fancy banks when they're like, we need to make this bank look official, right? Yeah. We're going to put like giant columns in there and stuff. So they still have these huge columns inside the building. And of course, there's all the art, too. They have modern art, traditional Japanese art, art from around the world.
Nice.
And if you're not sick of museums yet, there's also the Hoki Museum, which seems to focus on modern art and realism, which seems interesting if you're into art.
Chiba's real cultural center with all these awesome museums.
Yeah.
So moving away from museums, if you're done.
I'm done.
Yeah. There's the Chiba Port Tower, which is obviously the port area near Tokyo Bay. It was built in 1986. It's 125 meters tall and is known for its observation deck on the top that you can get some great views. You can see Tokyo from it, but if you look the other way, you get to see Chiba City, and you can even see Mount Fuji on the right day.
If the
weather's right.
That's impressive, actually. That's pretty far away.
Yep. That's maybe about the farthest you can see it from.
Yeah, maybe. So here's my thing about Chiba Port Tower.
Okay.
It's kind of funny looking. Like, did you look at a lot of pictures of it?
Yeah. But you don't see it once you're inside it.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, close-up pictures aren't going to give you a sense of kind of how it looks, where it is. Like, if you look at a more zoomed-out picture... It's just really funny to me because there are no other tall buildings around it. It's just on its own, you know, which isn't super unusual, I guess, for a port tower.
Yeah.
But the weird thing about this is, like, it doesn't look like a tower. Like when I think tower, I'm thinking Tokyo Tower or the Space Needle or something. You know, they look like towers, but this looks like an office building. It looks like a big skyscraper with no other skyscrapers around it, which just is really funny to me.
Well, I guess kind of related note, there is more than just an observation deck. So with Tokyo Tower, there's pretty much you just go up, there's an observation deck, and that's all there is.
Uh-huh.
There's multiple floors you can visit in the Chiba Port Tower.
Right.
So you buy your ticket on the first floor. The next floor you can go to is dedicated to the love theme.
What?
You can get a love lock and hang it up there. There's also
Hang it on what?
I guess there's a place to put your love locks on this floor.
Are love locks, is it common knowledge what those are? Because I've seen those before, but
I don't know if it is or not.
You know what that is, though?
I mean, I've seen a bunch of them. I guess I don't know all the lore.
Where have you seen them?
In various places in Japan, like Love 3-themed shrines and things.
Huh.
I think you can buy these locks at the gift shop downstairs.
So you're talking like little padlocks, basically,
yes.
Right? I don't think I've ever seen any of those in Japan, but I remember seeing them in Paris on the bridges across the Seine.
Okay.
There are just tons of locks on there.
Okay. I guess my thought was always like, you know, a couple buys the lock and puts it together, and as long as this lock stays locked, we'll be together or something.
Yeah. Like you can get a lock, you can draw a little heart on it, and then put PB plus J in the middle of that heart and lock it up, and it symbolizes your love for each other.
They read the court papers every day like, oh, this Denise and John got divorced. Better go cut that lock off.
Man, what a job that would be.
So on the love floor, there's also two fortune-telling machines. So you can double-check that you're compatible together.
Like the Zoltar? Zoltan?
I did see a picture, so I'm not sure. Hmm. I'm sure it spits out some sort of fortune.
Yeah. And you're not going to, sorry, this is interesting, but you're not going to go through every floor of this tower, right?
Only four.
Okay.
Only four. There's also a restaurant floor, and then the top is the observation deck. That would be the fourth floor I'm talking about.
Okay.
Which gives you those views. I'm done with the tower now.
All right.
And the last cool place I have is Mihama-en, which is a Japanese garden.
Mihama-en.
Yeah, Mihama-en.
Got it.
Sorry, I didn't say that super smoothly.
Like the letter N?
It's a Japanese garden. It's got a nice large koi pond plus a tea house, and it's said to be really quiet even though it's really nestled right in the city. They do a good job of making you feel very isolated, and a bunch of benches you can sit down, good relaxing spot to take a break.
Cool. I found myself just spouting random facts about koi to my coworkers today. I usually try to hold in, you know, the Japan nerd stuff, but once in a while it just like explodes out of me. I can't help it. But one of my coworkers just got back from Hawaii, and she was talking about koi, and she was like, they were so huge, it was amazing. And I was like, let me tell you, you don't even know. You don't know half of it.
I got one city left.
Oh, I still have two more super quick, like two sentences about Chiba.
Okay.
Chiba Zoological Park sounds popular. It's a zoo, essentially. So it depends on how you feel about zoos. But they do have a lot of exotic animals that I've never seen before. That would just, it'd be cool to see them in person. The thing that interests me most is the red pandas. They're just so cute, man.
Yeah.
There aren't many cuter animals than red pandas. Another place that looks really nice in Chiba is Chiba Shrine. One of the more colorful shrines I've seen.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, we can move on.
Okay. The last day trip I've got for us today is Shizuoka. It is the capital city of Shizuoka Prefecture, although only the second largest city in the prefecture.
Oh, what's the first largest?
Hamamatsu, I believe it was.
Okay.
Population of Shizuoka is 677,000. Most recent number I could get, so fairly large city.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It is located on the Pacific coast, about halfway between Tokyo and Nagoya.
You can get there in about 90 minutes via the bullet train.
Yes. So first place of interest I have is Toro Archaeological Site, because I'm going straight for the history.
Can I insert something? Just because I feel like this is the main thing in Shizuoka. Like this is what it's most known for, probably.
The archaeological site?
No, the one that I'm about to talk about.
Oh, okay. I want to
interrupt you.
You want to eat your dessert first.
Exactly. I want to insert the thing that I'm excited to talk about before you talk about your thing.
Sure. I've got things here, okay?
I have things too, but I mean, when it comes to Shizuoka, you got to talk about green tea, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, don't give me that, Paul. Shizuoka is all about tea. Go here if you like tea. The prefecture contains 40% of the total area of tea plantations in all of Japan.
That is pretty significant.
Yeah, see?
Gotta give it to you, Jason.
Makes sense that we're talking about this first. I saw that some of the local schools even have green tea on tap. Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man, maybe if we had that, I wouldn't have had to drink 6 Mountain Dews a day right? When I was in high school.
Instead of all the vending machines, we could have just had free green tea. It would have been so much more healthy.
I still think green tea, Uji.
Yeah.
That's just like stuck in my brain because we've been there. And that's a Kyoto day trip, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, that's another famous green tea place. But if we're talking just pure volume,
Shizuoka. Yeah.
So around the city, you see a bunch of stuff involving green tea, but you could even visit a tea plantation, get a tour, maybe have the opportunity to pick your own tea. That'd be really fun. Like, how many people even know what a tea plant looks like, you know?
I've only seen pictures.
I've seen videos.
Okay.
But yeah, like, you would think a tea plantation, like, that's got to be pretty far out of the city, right? But it's really not. You don't need to go that far. I saw that there's a plantation you can visit just a taxi ride away from Shizuoka Station.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that does sound cool, but my cynical brain all of a sudden gets me thinking, like, what if I start a farm here and I do it as like the Midwest experience? And in the spring, I'm like, you can plant your own corn seed. And then in the summer, I'm like, you can debug your own corn stock. And then in the fall, I'm like, you can harvest your own corn. And I basically get everyone to just do the farming for me and pay me for the pleasure. I'm a genius, right, Jason?
I don't think you'd get many takers. I don't think the tourists to this place are doing all that much. Maybe they're like grabbing a couple leaves and being like, oh, cool, I just picked some tea leaves.
Exported American corn oil isn't getting anyone excited to come learn about our agriculture.
You can process your own high fructose corn syrup.
Live like a real American.
Yeah. Just drink it by the gallon, pour it all over all your food.
You got any more on tea?
No, we can talk about the other stuff, I guess.
All right. Back to history.
Yeah, what were you saying about old things?
Toro Archaeological Site.
All right.
It is a well-kept site of a prehistoric village. There is a nice museum there that has a bunch of artifacts found in the area.
You said prehistoric. What like time periods are we talking about here?
Yayoi era.
Oh.
Yeah, so like early rice farmers.
Yeah.
The museum has pit dwellings, raised warehouses, and shrines from that era that have been restored to about 80% of their original size. And you can go inside them. So you can feel what it's like to use these buildings and live in that era.
Super cool.
They also have rice paddies that they farm on the area. So you can see, it really looks like an old village because you got the reconstructed buildings, you've got the rice paddies. It is the closest you can get to going back in time to that era.
Very cool.
I guess still on the history kick here is the Sumpu Castle Park. There is no longer a castle there. But there's a statue of Tokugawa Ieyasu and a reconstructed gatehouse.
So there's no castle keep there.
Yes.
But there are some buildings, even though none of those buildings are original anyway.
Yes.
But it is just kind of cool that this was Tokugawa Ieyasu's castle right here.
Yeah.
He built it in 1586. So,
yeah.
I don't know. If you're into the Tokugawa history stuff, that's kind of cool.
Also on the grounds is Momijiyama Garden, which is a nice Japanese garden with a tea house.
Okay.
You know, if it's a Japanese garden, it's always worth a stop, right?
Yeah. Were you going to talk about Kunozan Toshogu Shrine at all?
Let's talk about it now.
Okay. It's a beautiful shrine. And it was the first shrine to enshrine Tokugawa Ieyasu. And it also has the other two unifiers, Oda Nobunaga and Toyotomi Hideyoshi. It's got all three of the great unifiers.
I remember in our Nico episode, this was part of the controversy of like, where is Ieyasu interred?
Well, he's not interred here. He's enshrined, which is different.
Okay.
He's spiritually here, but they're not claiming that his physical body is there.
Okay. So is that really in Nico?
No. Not in my opinion, and I talked about that in the Nico episode, I'm pretty sure.
And is that at a different shrine?
I don't think it is there.
Or is that this
one? Yeah, no. What? This isn't the one that claims that his body is there, is it? Is this that one?
This is that one.
Oh.
Yeah.
And maybe they do have his body here. My bad.
Maybe. It's a maybe.
All I could remember was that it wasn't at Nico, but I forgot which other one he should be at.
Because he retired to Shizuoka. Like, this is where he died.
Okay, so this is the one that, like, the royal family still visits.
Yeah.
Or his family, anyway.
Yeah, the head of the Tokugawa clan still goes here to pay their respects.
Okay, sorry, I was confused.
It's all right.
I didn't realize that this was that one.
It is.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But they don't have, like, something set up saying, like, here's where he is, right? It's just kind of...
I've got this description of like some of the buildings I saw, and then it was like, even deeper into the woods sits the tomb of Ieyasu, is like the most clarification I could find.
Okay.
So you go past all the main shrine buildings.
I think we'll have to go, because we went to the supposed tomb in Nico. I guess we got to visit this one and just see if we can feel his presence.
Yeah, you know? This one should be less crowded.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's a really well-decorated, large shrine, and it's on a mountain, so it's a 1,000-step climb, about, is what it seemed, or you can take a ropeway.
Okay.
But you get nice views, and it seemed like the ropeway continued even further up to the top of the mountain, and then you'd get views from there, too. And one thing about Shizuoka that we haven't mentioned yet is that you get really good views of Mount Fuji from here.
Oh, yes, you do.
On a clear day, so that would be one good spot for that.
Yeah. Can we talk about another place where you can see Mount Fuji?
Yes.
So there's this little peninsula that sticks out into the bay there, where you can visit Miho Beach. Did you read about the beach?
Yes.
It looks like a beautiful beach.
It looks so cool.
And it's got a pine forest, like, just beyond the sand. Or was it more of a rocky? I feel like there's a little bit of sand, but it's mostly kind of a rocky beach. Does that sound right?
Yeah, but it's pretty thin. So that's why it looks so cool, because you've got the ocean, and then you've got this thin strip of sand, a thin strip of rocks, and then the pine trees just cutting this straight line. And all the sight lines funnel you straight towards your view of Mount Fuji.
Yeah, they kind of frame the mountain.
Yeah.
And I think I remember seeing there are a bunch of paths through the pine forest that looked pretty fun. Like, it just seems like a cool place to walk around.
Yeah, it's a 7-kilometer long beach with the pine forest. You could walk up and down it, see the views, take your nature in. It seems absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
This is what originally caught my attention about Shizuoka. This was the first thing I found.
Really?
And then I started digging in and found the other stuff.
Wow. You know, I do really feel like, for how many times I've been to Japan, I really haven't seen Mount Fuji from a lot of different vantage points. Like, I just caught a glimpse of it from the train, you know, when I was passing it.
Yeah.
And like, that's kind of mostly it. Well, then there, of course, there was a time that we were on it, but I feel like it's almost even more impressive further away, you know?
It was cool seeing it up close.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cloudy that day, but the clouds did break for a little bit. We did see the top.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we were halfway up it already.
Yeah.
Yeah, my original plan was like, oh, just hop off the bullet train in Shizuoka, go to the beach, see if you can see the mountain and get back on the train. But then I found all this other stuff.
Yeah. I got one more thing to mention in Shizuoka, Paul.
Okay.
It's called S-Pulse Dream Plaza.
What?
Isn't that a cool name?
Yes.
It's a very grand name for what is essentially just a shopping mall.
Okay.
It's a shopping mall. But it does look like a cool one, especially if you have kids. Like, it's got a lot of kid stuff in there. Like Chibi Maruko-chan Land. You ever heard of Maruko-chan?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you know about Maruko-chan?
Very little, because it doesn't pique my interest.
Okay.
But famous little character or something.
Yeah, it's just a popular children's character. I think they have it's like a little museum about Maruko-chan.
Okay.
I don't know if kids are that interested in museums, but there's got to be like fun activities to do in this place, right?
Yeah. I'm sure they got stuff to keep the kids happy.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. Just the name itself stuck out to me. I'm like, S Pulse Dream Plaza. What is that?
It sounds like a cool ball.
Yeah. Well, I think we got to the end of our list, didn't we?
Yeah. So this was a first for us. We've never done a day trip episode before, right?
Yeah.
There are a bunch more day trips we could do.
I think we probably need to do a day trips part two episode at some point.
But do we do Tokyo Day Trips part two, or do we do a Kyoto Day Trips episode? Let us know what you guys think.
Yeah, we could do...
Send in a comment or go to the Discord. What'd you think? Is it a cool episode? Do you want more day trips?
We could talk about day trips from any major city in the country.
Yeah.
But I feel like we got to cover like Tokyo, Kyoto, Kyoto/Osaka.
We should probably do one for every main city then, eventually, right?
Eventually.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got today, Jason.
Yep. Hope you enjoyed. Hope one of those caught your ear. Before we go, we should thank our Shogun-level patrons, Wesley C., Nicholas McKibben, Kevin Harris, Brady K., Jack, Michael Morris, David Imani, Jennifer Crutchfield, Darwin Perrier, Max, Yasmin, Sonny Schultz, Jason, Ethan Teague, and Katarina and Ellery. Thank you all so much for your support.
Thank you very much. Please feel free to go check out our Patreon. We've got some cool stuff up there, including some folklore episodes that we will be dropping more of, and even a behind-the-scenes video, a Q&A, a Cooking with PB&J episode.
And more to come.
And you get to listen to the episodes first.
Yeah, early access.
Where can people find us, Jason?
I haven't mentioned this in a while, but I want to because we've gotten some reviews and messages and stuff that made me think this would be good to mention. So, okay, find us on our website, sightseeingjapanpodcast.com. And if you're looking for content about a specific topic, go to the episode list page on our website. There's a list of all of our episodes that we've ever done. They're categorized even into like cities and culture and
food
and regions and all that stuff, so you can zero in on what you're looking for. But on top of that, there's a search bar at the top, so even if you don't find like a full episode about what you're interested in, type it into the search bar and it will like look inside each episode, and you might find a place where, you know, maybe we spent 10-15 minutes talking about it, even if it wasn't a whole episode.
Nice.
But even with whole episodes, like I've had people just recently request like a cherry blossom episode or a kawaii episode, and we've done those.
Yep.
You just got to find them on that list.
Yes.
So, calling that out.
Great point.
Paul, what are we talking about next time?
Our next episode is all about Akihabara, the Electric City.
All right. I like Akihabara. I think I've probably been there every single time I've been in Tokyo.
I have.
I know you
heard every trip to Japan. Maybe not every time I've been to Tokyo.
Sure. Tell us, why are we doing an episode about Akihabara?
One, I think it's a place that a huge percentage of people that come to Japan see and go to. And also, even more so, the subset of otaku. If you're into video games, anime, idol culture, electronics, anything nerdy at all, Akihabara is the place. Some very weeby people even hold it to be almost sacred ground for otaku.
For good reason.
So I think it's worth a deeper dive and a little closer look at exactly what's going on there.
All right. Well, I think it'll be good. It's a really cool part of the city. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.